Voice of Reason Broadcast Network presents The Heretics Hour with Carolyn Yeager. Carolyn Yeager brings you news and commentary on Holocaust revisionism, World War II history, free speech issues, and more. And now, here's Carolyn.
Hello again, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Carolyn Yeager. My guest tonight is a distinguished gentleman who has been as tireless as Erika Steinbach in his efforts for recognition of the immense suffering of the ethnic German population, numbering in the millions that were expelled from their historic homelands at the end of World War II and for many years following that, until the area was almost entirely ethnically cleansed of Germans. This is called the Vertreibung, something like that, the expulsion. And it is far worse, in my opinion, and I think if it were historically said as it really is, far worse than the expulsion of Jews out of Europe to the East between 42 and 45. You know from things I've said in the past that this is a sore subject with me. I have a lot of strong feelings about it. And we're going to learn something about this tonight, about what it's really all about. My guest name is Dr. Rudolf Puschel. He has a website at http://rudolf-puschel.com. I urge you to go to that when you have the opportunity. So without further ado, welcome, Rudy, and I hope it's all right that I call you Rudy.
Certainly.
All right. Well, I'm so glad to have you with me tonight. And what I want to begin with is that I would like you to introduce yourself. Tell us something about yourself and where you were born, where you live now, what your status is, and maybe why or what you've been doing about this subject all these years.
Well, I was born in what then was Czechoslovakia, which was a province of Bohemia and part of the Austrian-Hungarian monarchy until 1918, and in Versailles, during those so-called peace conferences, the Czechoslovaks were guaranteed their own state, with exclusion of the Germans to have any influence on determining the state of affairs of minorities in particular. They had nothing to say about the constitution of the country, and so there are minorities oppressed from the beginning. In 1938, this is Dedenland, the German part of Bohemia, and Moravia was liberated, in my opinion and many other people's opinion, by the German Wehrmacht under Adolf Hitler. And during the war, it became, after occupation by the Germans, a protectorate, a German protectorate, Bohemia and Moravia. And history shows that it was the most peaceful part of Europe during World War II. Mm. Nevertheless, antagonism between the Germans and the Czechs led to the decision by the then Spanish government to expel all Germans and make it a homogenized Slavonic state. Now, I was 12 years old when the expulsion occurred. Fate had it that we ended up in what became East Germany, then the Soviet occupation zone of Germany, which led to despair because of suppression of the mind and many other disadvantages. So I left East Germany, then the German Democratic Republic, and went to West Germany, the Federal Republic of Germany, lived 8 years in West Germany, and then emigrated to the United States.
When were you able to leave East Germany?
It was in 1954. It was a time when the Berlin Wall was not established yet, and you could transfer through West Berlin and get off a train and not get back on. So this was relatively easy. Short of having needing a permission to go to West Berlin. And I happened to be a student at Potsdam, and I had to travel from the zone, from East Germany, through West Berlin to my place of study. So for me it was very easy to leave at this time.
All right. Thank you.
Well, and then in 1962 I got a job offer of all places at the California Institute of Technology. I had no idea how famous an institution Caltech was. But I accepted the offer, and, well, this led to a government scientist career over the next 30-some years. I'm retired from my job since 2001, and transferred from a scientist to a humanist by an encounter with my mother in fall of 1989. When I realized how badly she was hurt by this explosion. And I promised my mother to work on it, to make sure it is not being forgotten. Her fate is not being forgotten.
Can you tell us some of what she went through a little bit?
Well, it's despair. It wasn't much of a exchange of ideas, but you mentioned something like, now that I get old, I realize how much your dad was hurt, and I it's bitter. It was just an understanding without words.
Yes.
More or less. And I got her to, because I didn't know, I knew very little, I didn't work on it all my career. I had her to write down her experiences. And this was now several notebooks or 90-minute tapes from which I tell stories of what has happened in those days. So I owe it essentially to my mother to get involved, to have been gotten involved in explosion research in humanities in general. And the other influence I had was from a Czech woman named, by the name of Sidonia Dedina. She got to find out by chance of what happened in some event in Czechoslovakia in 1945 by an encounter with Alfred Desires, the human rights advocate and international lawyer. And she researched the subject and wrote a book called The Liquidator.
And this is on your website. I want people to know a review of her book. It's a pretty long review. Is that what it is, a review of the book?
There are a few reviews which I managed to get, yes, and I have published those on my website.
Yes, and you translated the book, right?
This was a major effort which led to my retirement. I promised Sidonia I'm going to translate her book, which I did. But it was such a job that I could not occupy my main job at all any longer, and I retired from it. But those two influences, so two women influenced me to become a researcher in humanities and led to this interview.
Yes. All right, so can you tell us a little bit about how you function now in this interest, after what you've done?
Well, as you know, if you start something like this, there is no end to it. I mean, you answer one question and you raise 10 more. And, of course, I got involved in my studies with the Sudetendeutsche Landsmannschaft. And the Sudetendeutsche Landsmannschaft is part of the Bund der Vertriebenen, the Federation of Ex-Police. And I got to know about the politics and so on and so forth. And I did not, I wasn't enthused about any of those. But I realized that there are a few idealists who put all their effort in finding justice for those who had lost. They didn't lose their lives, but they lost everything else. And one of those persons is Erika Steinbach. I do not agree with many things Erika Steinbach represents. For example, she is not asking for restitution of lost property. She gave this up long time ago. But I was impressed with the efforts to establish the Center for Expulsion, or Center Against Expulsion, which was to commemorate the events and publicize the events in an effort to not let it happen again, and also to work on understanding of, in our case, the Czechs and the Sudeten Germans. But she had a tremendous amount of resistance to encounter from within the German, Federal German Republic, especially those parties in power, and not only the leftist or the opposition parties, but also the very own Christian Democratic Union. Most of the opposition came from abroad, and mainly from Poland, and she withstood all those attacks and resistances for 10 full years, till finally she decided not to be part of the board of the Center for Expulsion. The government decided to erect a center in their own interests, but this has been jeopardized by representatives of the German Federation of Expellees, which are just of some different opinion than is politically correct, and therefore many of other candidates for the board resigned, and the whole project is in jeopardy. But the latest issue, but this was nothing to calm down the opposition to Erika Steinbach. She is still very much attacked at present in her own party. I think there's a change now, but it started by her stating that it was not her fault that Poland mobilized the armed forces in spring of 1939, which is a fact. But she was the only one who either knew about it, or nobody else had the courage to make a statement like this. Now, I understand there is a change in attitude of the party leadership, mainly because they are afraid that there might be a new party formed a little bit right of the Christian Democratic Union, which would jeopardize many of the party members in the party in power right now. So I understand that Erika Steinbach has been invited back into the chairmanship of the party, not the chairmanship, but the board of advisory board to the chairmanship of the party, and it would be very interesting to see what her answer will be.
She's been invited back, you said?
Well,
is that what you said? They're not going to expel her from the party.
I think the very latest, as of a few days ago, is that the party chairmanship, the party leadership is afraid Steinbach and others, which are dissatisfied, may form an independent party which would, cost votes to the Christian
Democratic Union. Okay, I see what you're saying now.
So as far as I know, she is asked to not to resign her participation in the party leadership, and so on and so forth. It's just a, we call it vendor heist. I mean, people change their mind depending on how many votes it costs them.
Mm-hmm. Well, from the beginning, the Expellee Federation had this plan to build this center in Berlin, because as we know, there are all these monuments to the Jews and their Holocaust, and all these monuments to even to the communists, like in the former East German area, we still have all these monuments. When I was there, I was so surprised to see all these statues of communists and plazas and the names and all left over. And yet anything that would even hint of the Third Reich or the National Socialist regime is just absolutely forbidden. Yeah. Except under the control conditions of showing it as something so bad, you know, where they have their special museums which give the story that they want to give.
Promote and, their ideas, represent themselves,
Yes. Yet, from the beginning, this has been difficult, and it really has been the Polish government, the Polish representatives, who have stood in the way and been so intransigent about it, and really, in my mind, you know, Germany, the German government bends over backwards, and it really shouldn't even, they might have some advice to give, or they might be considered somewhat, but it's not their decision. This is for Germans in Germany. You know, if they were building something for the Poles and any kind of Polish suffering or Polish victims in Poland, You think the German government or the Germans, well, it's the government, would have anything to say about it? This
no.
is where it is so unbalanced. It makes
yes.
me just...
And that's the consequences of 65 years of free education of the German people. It started
well,
after the war. They brought in the immigrants, and it's continuing today. And the German people, by and large, is following it.
They are, because I think they're just scared into thinking that the whole world is going to turn against them. Do you think they really believe it? I mean, some do.
Well, I don't think so. But it just points towards the existence of a Kanzlerakte, which we talked about before, remember? But it had been reputed the Kanzlerakte states that the German government is obliged to the governors of the United States and, you know, the influence of IPEC on American policies, therefore it obliged to the government of Israel until 2099. It has been repudiated by one Dr. Nordbruch, quite convincingly, and Nordbruch states himself that it needs no Kanzlerakte to understand why the German people are so subversive to the so-called victors of World War II.
Hmm. You sound a little bit pessimistic that this center is ever going to be built.
If it's being built, it is being built in the interest of the expeller states rather than the expellees.
Well, That's it.
You know, the Federation of Expellees is, first of all, expellees are dying out. There aren't many left of us. And those who are left were very young when it happened. So this Federation of Expellees is losing its meaning over time.
But historically, I mean, you know, it doesn't seem to me to matter whether there's expellees still alive. It's a matter of historical record.
It's a matter of truth. It's
yeah.
a matter of facts. And I think
and so the rest of us need to support the expellees, and I suppose there's not enough support. That's what you're saying. There's not enough support for them.
I think so. That's true. Unless the German people are waking up from a bad dream and demand what the rights for the expellees.
You know, I had Günter Deckert on quite a few weeks ago now, maybe a couple months ago, and I asked him about this, and he said that he thought there was no question that it was going to be. I said I would rather it not be built at all than that it be so watered down that it was, like you say, from the point of view of the expeller nations rather than the point of view of the expellees. And he says, well, he thought it would be built and it needed to be built and that was it would be there and then you could work on it from there. But I don't know. Do you think of that?
Look, Darlene, 65 years have passed. Those people who suffered, who were victimized in 1945, 1946, had been told their life long you are responsible for your fate, it's your fault that you got expelled, and this opinion still prevails. And those people, most of those people died knowing, well, I did something wrong. I caused two world wars, or contributed to two world wars, and caused lots of suffering to the world. And in that's pretty depressing for individuals to have gone through this. I lived long enough, fortunately, to see a change, a possible change arise right now, thanks to your work and the work of others.
Well, not much thanks to me, but I certainly make as much noise as I can on my little, my very little sphere. But, you know, I don't even speak German, so I'm not very useful.
Well, others. I mean, look at Patrick Buchanan, who wrote Churchill,
yes.
Hitler, and the Unnecessary War. Look at General Gerd Schulze-Bornhof, who wrote Der Vater, der Krieg, der viele Väter hatte, the war who had lots of fathers. I mean, it's coming around. I mean, there are people working on it. And I'm convinced in, I don't know, 50, 100, 150, 200 years, the picture has all changed. But it's too late for me to benefit from it.
Yes, well, but you're helping so much in the cause. You're not saying very much, but I know that you travel and you go to a lot of you go to conferences and you write letters and you're very familiar with what's with everything you use.
Well, for example, this movie, The Forgotten Genocide, which Ann Morrison in St. Louis created. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's another step forward. And those are interviews with ex-police from the Balkan area, the Donau Schwaben, the Karpaten Germans, mm-hmm. who are all, you know, seniors. And it's the last chance to get something out of those people. I think it's tremendously important to talk to people who lived through those years.
Yes, get all those records, get all that written down. It's absolutely is. And you have yours. You said you wrote your mother's story, and have you written things for yourself too?
Yeah, well, I wrote a heavy book in German, 400 some pages. But I think it's more important to write short stories. I mean, separated yes. into small pieces of information, because that's more likely to be read.
Okay,
and that's interesting. I had Gertrud Zoronoff. I mean, there are also newspapers in Germany now. There is Junge Freiheit, which is a center-right newspaper. There's the Preußische Allgemeine Zeitung, Prussian general newspaper, which are very much in favor of what Helga Steinbach is doing, what Gertrud Zoronoff is doing, what you and I are doing, and publicize it. So I think there is a change coming about, but slowly and very slow.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. I think so too. Can you tell the listeners more about the Benish, what do they call, dictator, the Benish rules that you're very familiar with, and you've done a lot of work along those lines?
So-called Benish decrees.
Decrees, yes, the decrees.
Well, in order to legalize elimination of Germans in what then was Czechoslovakia, then President Benes issued a certain amount of decrees, only maybe a dozen or so, which apply to it. And they justify the removal of property, the expulsion, or the killings. I don't know, are you aware of a Czech television broadcast called Killing the Czech Way?
Well, I'm not sure. That's not that film that came out recently that showed people being shot.
Well, it's an event which took place in 1945 in Prague, where they rounded up German civilians, murdered them, drove trucks over them, and buried them. And this was accidentally filmed by someone who had a movie camera ready and filmed it in 1945. And only last year, or the year before, was this film made public. It was hidden out of fear for so many decades till somebody had the courage to show it.
And was it a Czech person who filmed
yes.
it?
Yes, it was a Czech individual.
And finally brought it out?
Mm-hmm. Who filmed it, his daughter inherited it, and I think her son or someone finally brought it out. And this came as a shock to the Czechs, because they had no idea. So most of the Czechs have no idea what was going on in those days.
Mm-hmm. Well, they don't, because they're it's all hidden, they're not told. You're right, you can't really blame them. But the thing that I found, because I wrote an article with Dr. Kreisman on bodies, mass graves of bodies and so on, and we were, so part of it dealt with some of the atrocities in Czechoslovakia. There's no mass graves there, but they were marching people out and killing them and so on. And the thing is that when the Czechs are confronted with this, they don't want to do very much about it, do they? I mean, it's so, they say, oh my, that's terrible. Then they don't want anything built or any memorials, or they don't want to be reminded of it.
Yeah, on the other hand, one experience last year, I conduct a seminar every year after the Sudeten-German Tag in Augsburg or Nuremberg. And last year, or this year, we decided to go on a field trip to Aussig, aus die Nadlaben. And in Aussicht, a pogrom took place on 31st July 1945, where hundreds of thousands of Germans were killed. And there's a memorial plaque, you know, and it says, quite generally, it says, to the victims of violence. It doesn't say who were the victims, who were the perpetrators. You could assume, and it just happened so, if somebody sees it, a visitor who doesn't know the facts, he believes, again, some Germans have killed Czechs and so on
exactly.
and so forth. But we could go, a group of 30-some people, assemble at this plaque and lay a wreath. And along comes a Czech, quite emotional. He witnessed was a speech, you know, dedication and so on and so forth. This young Czech got quite emotional and grabbed the hand of one of our participants and apologized and told her he regrets what happened and that he apologized. So even young people now turn around and realize that something terrible had happened. But I think it's very, very late in the game. It will last many, many more years before the majority of Czechs realize something went wrong in their country.
Yes, well, Dr. Purcell, we're going to take a break now. We have a news break, and then we'll go on and continue our program for the second half. So hang on, listeners. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back with more on the Heretics Hour. You're listening to VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
As the mortgage crisis cuts deep, real estate firms say over 1 million American households may lose their homes to foreclosure this year. With no end in sight, a high unemployment across the country, more and more risks are losing their property. Anastasia Cherkina reports now on how a camp outside New York has become a place some people now reluctantly call home.
America the prosperous, America the traditional, and America the broke. The picture-perfect homes and these homes are a 20-minute drive away from one another.
How did I end up here? Probably through my own mistakes in life.
RT revisits Tent City, a homeless camp tucked away in the woods of New Jersey. There are at least 40 people whose tragic destinies have led them to call this place home. Since we were here last time in the winter, things have changed. More tents have appeared. Some people have come and gone. But many of the people living here have been here for months, if not years. And the question that many of them ask themselves over and over again is, why are we still here? Are there really no other options left for us? Noreen Moss has been a newspaper handler for most of her life.
Well, I worked for the New York Times, and I wound up having a brain aneurysm and 2 strokes. I was almost dead. I was in a coma for 2 months, and I was in the hospital for 3 months.
Since then, Noreen has given up hope of finding a job. For those still trying to find work, the task is close to impossible, with the unemployment rate in the U.S. holding steady at more than 9.5% for more than a year now.
Over 17 years experience, chef. Today I'm looking job, not only chef job, any kind of job I look. I have too many application, you know, but no, I don't find anymore. And, you know, that's very, very difficult now to find a job.
And those who are able to find work make less than the minimum wage.
I work all day, just pick up $5.
Reverend Steve Brigham set up the camp for the homeless 4 years ago.
This is our church bell. On Sunday, about 12 o'clock, we ring this to let the whole camp know that we're about ready to have our service.
The Reverend runs the place, keeping it in order, setting up a shower, and helping with whatever donations he can get. Local authorities have been disturbed by this camp's existence and have tried to shut the place down.
People think of the homeless as people that are sometimes questionable in their character, but there's more problems outside of the homeless camp than inside of the camp.
The only option offered by local officials has been beds at a local psychiatric institution among the mentally unstable. The community didn't go for it. It's more than they can handle, already living a tough enough life.
It's just not a place to live.
Everyone here tells us a better place for them is just around the corner.
How soon do you think you'll be out of here?
Very soon. Very soon.
But so far, no luck. With not much help from the outside world, all they can do is hope a better life is awaiting them somewhere. Anastasia Churkina, RT, New Jersey.
Let's return to the Heretics Hour, brought to you by VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm talking tonight with my guest, Dr. Rudolf Puchel, and he has been giving us some extremely interesting information. I'm just thrilled with our conversation so far. We're going to turn now to talking about the great storm going on around Tilo Sarrazin and his book, Germany Abolishes Itself. And the latest on that is that his supporters are really speaking up. I've got a few quotes here, Rudy, from them. And I'd like to know your opinion. First, whatever you want to say about it, but also how far do you think this will go? And do you have any feeling at all about whether this man will stick with what he's doing and keep going forward with it?
I haven't read the book, but I will. It's a bestseller after all, and this indicates how much the German people want information on the facts, what really is going on, and the concerns about what I'm not sure he calls it, but it concerns the Muslimization of Germany. I mean, I don't know the exact number, but a few million Turks living in amongst 80 million Germans. But you have a population rate on one side and on the other side. And big families, big Muslim families, and small Christian families. And you can predict the time when Muslims will take over Germany.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. All you have to do is look at the United States. Look at the state we're in here with all our immigration, and suddenly it turns, and we know the state that I live in and the state you live in are both majority non-white.
Yep.
Right now.
Yes.
And that's growing fast. So then you have the political control, and when they have political control, well, what kind of a country are you going to have? Not
yep.
your country.
Yes. And then the religious control on top of it.
Yes.
Ooh. But as far as Tilo Sarrazin goes, I have not known him or about him till a few weeks ago, but I'm impressed for what he stands and how he represents himself. I mean, after all, he was one of the chairmen of the Bundesbank, the German Federal Bank. And interestingly, how quickly he has been forced out. It's another case where I think the Chancellor has not thought through what's going on here. I mean, let the lefties oppose Sarrazin, but don't condemn him all across the board in spite of not knowing what he stands for. Apparently, to avoid any controversy, he has resigned his post at the Bundesbank. I guess as an author, he's so successful he doesn't need any other income. But it's just typical for what's going on in Germany. We're suppressing the opinion, which is guaranteed by the Constitution, by the Grundgesetz, mm-hmm. expression of your mind. And yet it is being suppressed time and again.
David
Sarrazin is at the same level of Erika Steinbach at a different issue.
He said something that I found very interesting. I don't know if this is in the book or something he said in an interview, but it is the truth is that Germans, quote, have accepted as inevitable that Germany will be smaller and dumber. This is very sad.
Well, it's, you know, it seems like, but on the other hand, I mean, people buy his book and people read his book.
Yes,
and
yes,
I can't
yes.
help but thinking it got to have some influence on the way of thinking of the German people.
Yes, I've got something here on his supporters. Okay, alive. This is one of the latest articles I saw just from yesterday. A lively crowd of several hundred in Berlin paid to hear Saracen debate his book, Germany Abolishes Itself. This may have been a little while back, but this actual event. But support for the ex-banker was palpable as the crowd applauded his defense of his theories and drowned out any participants who questioned his use of genetic theory or accused him of manipulating the data. And this fellow named Temme, who is not a right-winger at all, he says, because we started and lost two world wars, nobody dares to say it, or what Saracen is saying. But now somebody has spoken the truth and everybody agrees.
Okay. And he stands for it. And I said he needs bodyguards to protect himself against some radicals. But he keeps on going. And this gives me hope that Germany is not all lost yet.
Yes, I hope so too. I think so. He's also another comment is that he said that the three immigrant groups with the largest educational deficit and the highest social welfare costs are the Turks, the immigrants from the former Yugoslavia, and from the Middle East. What do you say about that?
I believe it. I don't know what else to say, but you keep coming. I mean, at the expense of the German people having jobs and so on and so forth. And it's not only an economical issue, it's a cultural issue. I mean, those people behave differently, and they offend the Germans. And I know many a German who tells me, if I could, I would emigrate, I would leave this country. Because of those few million of, Turks and Yugoslavs and Middle Easterners.
And where would they go? That they would be.
Well, that's the problem. They don't. I mean, I lucked out. I got out in time, and I'm not going back because of not this issue, but my I don't even call it anti-Semitic issue. I'm not an anti-Semitist, but
no, I know
I'm an anti-Zionist. Okay, I oppose radical Zionism, which I claim is as bad as was fascism and communism. And this is a dangerous stand in Germany. This gets you to jail.
Well, the problem for the Germans is that what this man said, he likes Saracen, he agrees with Saracen, but he also said, because we've started and lost two world wars. Well, he may not even believe that, but that's the general
those are a few years in thousands of years of history. And as long as those few years, say, call it 12 years, 1933 to 1945, as long as those few years dominate the thinking or the history or the history of the German people, there's no hope for any changes. But you can't weigh a dozen years against thousands of years and expect those dozen years will prevail.
No, you can't. And also, I don't agree with the "we started" part. I mean, I agree with we lost two world wars, but I don't agree that Germans started two world wars.
So
that all needs to be, you know, that's
yeah,
why the revisionism, and that's why the leftists just go after
them. Tell them to read Buchanan, and it's being read.
Yeah.
I saw, interestingly, in the English version, Hitler is on the cover page. In the German version, Churchill is on the cover page.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I saw the German version. And they read Schulze Rohnhoff, Der Krieg, der viele Väter hatte. And those opinion, I mean, the history books don't tell it, and that's a problem. I mean, people learn something in school and, you know, hold it for the rest of their lives. And only a few bother to read on and educate themselves further. But it's going to come about. I can't help it. And Schulze Rohnhoff has summarized this. I mean, it's a 600-plus page book, you know, and some people shy away from heavy books. So he has summarized or synopticized this book in 14 points, which has been published in the Junge Freiheit, the German weekly newspaper. And point number four treats the treatment of minorities in Poland in before World War II. Mm. And this clearly shows that the Germans had a reason to object. And I guess that's all they did.
The little bit that Erika Steinbach has said about Poland and their behavior in through the year of 1939, it doesn't even begin to cover what actually was being done by the Poles, and yet that is just such a no-no, and they all start screaming as soon as you
that's
bring
right.
that up.
That's right. If they would hear the whole truth, they would, would get much more upset.
Yes, because they're afraid of that revanchism that they're bringing up that word now. They're afraid that they're going to ask for something back. You know, they're going to want to get some territory back, or they're going to want to get they're afraid they're going to lose what they've gained. Well, anyway, I want to bring up something that's controversial and ask you how you see this. I have another little quote from this article about Saracen. An Iranian who they asked, you know, the journalists are out asking people their opinions and on the street, and an Iranian who immigrated to Germany as a child and became a citizen, and actually he's a very well-known one, but I'm not saying his name. He said, most of what's in the book, Saracen's book, is harmful, painful populism. Or I question his term populism. And then he says, I am also a German. And well, he's a citizen. But, you know, I have a problem with this. Because when it comes to nations in Europe, when you're a German or you're a Frenchman or you're a Pole, you know, can you just become that because you become a citizen? I have a problem with this man saying, I am a German. Because to me, he's not a German. There should be some other term.
Take, for example, the German national soccer team. When they line up and the German anthem is played, the Germans sing it, but the Turks and the Poles don't.
Yes.
I mean, if they live in Germany, they should feel German. If they don't feel German, oh.
Yeah. I imagine there's some who do, but a lot of them don't, yet they say, I'm a German, you know, I'm a German. Don't tell me I'm not. I have as much to say about it all. But if they don't, if they won't sing the national anthem, then they're not.
And by definition, all the players in the national, in the German national team will have to be Germans, or they can't play. But they originate somewhere else, and or they are born and raised in Germany and yet don't feel German, don't feel at home.
Yes.
I guess this problem is going to stay with us.
Yes, now I have one more little quote here in this article. The government research, at the very end, they say, government research found that 37% of 15 to 19-year-olds of immigrant background lack a high school diploma, which is required for nearly any form of employment here. So if they don't have one, they're not capable of employment. That means they're going to be unemployed and they're going to be on the welfare rolls.
Yes.
And it goes on to say that 72% of Turkish-descended men aged 20 to 64 lack basic job training. Now, this is serious, and yet, what does the government say? It says, well, we need to do a better job of educating these people and of training these people.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, the minorities, immigrants would get preferred treatment to find a job and to get employment over the Germans. Similar as it is here. I mean, minorities have rights here and are sometimes advantageously treated.
Oh, well, absolutely they are. They are. There's not just maybe or sometimes, but they just about always are. Yes, and that's why the people are so resentful. Truthfully, Germans are very open to people from different nationalities, more so than I am now, but the reason that they are unhappy about this is because these people are making no effort. And Germans are kind of naturally working people who believe everybody should work and do their part. And they see these people sitting around and, you know, taking, and they're having to pay it. And the Germans, our Germans are spoken of as Germany's supposed to be such a booming economy, but the German people are not doing that well individually. They're struggling financially, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, not as much as here, I think, because of the different social structure. Mm-hmm. But, yes, there are problems. Still yeah. problems.
Well,
but I think it's a worldwide problem. It's not just a German problem.
Yes, yes.
I don't know how to solve it in one part of
but
the world.
But worldwide, we know we've had worldwide immigration and open borders, open trade, open not for everyone, not for every country, but, you know, all of our countries. And this is a result of it, economic yeah. breakdown.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go on to the fact that a new big story that's going to be coming up in Germany is that Bishop Williamson, as they have given him a court date now for November 29th. That is a ways away, but not that far. It's already only a couple of months. And his lawyer has said that he will probably appear in person. I find that, it's like, wow. You know, from what I understand, if he appears in person, he's in more danger of being put in jail. Is he willing to sacrifice himself to publicize these unfair laws?
On the other hand, if he does, you know, more power to him. And if he believes in what he has said, I think he should and defend himself. I don't like the idea to make a statement and then disappear and hide and not defend it. And this, again, would open eyes, would be an eye-opener to many German people. Here's a man who made a statement, and he stands behind it.
Yes, I would like to see that. I really would. I'd like to see him there. I'd like to see him stand behind it. But I do recognize that the track record is that no matter how justified it seems that people are and how much the public would say, leave him alone, he hasn't done anything wrong, the German judicial system and legal system is going to do what it usually does and is not going to show him any mercy or understanding or...
Yeah. Well, that's one reason I'm not going back to Germany. but again, unless people like Williamson... See, Hitler had lots of opponents, and many of those people stood up against him.
Yes.
And they paid. They paid dearly for it.
But you know, a lot of people... Some did, but there was a lot, in my opinion, from what I've read, there was a lot of disagreement with Hitler and with National Socialism, and these people continued on. They weren't all thrown in jail. I think the government now is almost more repressive than the government under Adolf Hitler. Do you think I'm all wet there?
Yeah, and the question is why, and I have an idea, but I guess this would go too far at this point. Maybe some other time we talk about it. I think all the power is in Jerusalem, not in Washington, not in Berlin, not in Warsaw.
Well, even for Germany, because I keep saying that Jewish power is strong in Europe, and there are a lot of people who say to me, oh, no, it's not. Europe is not. They don't have that much power in Europe. It's all in the United States. I don't. Maybe the United States is worse.
And again, because of the notion we started the war, we tried to eliminate the Jews, and now we have to pay for it.
Well, yes. Well, an example of this, of how they keep this going, is this German police raid that took place. Well, this news story is September 13th, so about a week ago or so. But it's just amazing. You know, there's an aid organization. This organization is called the Aid Organization for National Political Victims and Their Relatives. Sounds okay. You know, this is like the people who they put in prison for political crimes, like the revisionists, the Holocaust revisionists or whatever. And they need help, they need aid, and so this is an organization to aid these political victims. But the government, and who else, sees it as neo-Nazi. And so now they organize this huge raid in which they raided in 16 German states, I don't know how many people's homes, a large number, of everybody who was anybody in this organization. And here it is, it's believed to have some 600 members. 600 in a country of 80 million. And they say it's the country's largest neo-Nazi group. And so they're worried that, that this neo-Nazi group is going to, you know, going to start far-right alliances among other organizations. So they've gone and they've taken, you know, broken into these people's homes, taken whatever they wanted, taken their computers, and now they have them back at their police headquarters or whatever, and, you know, going through to see if they can find any evidence against these people. They don't have any evidence. They've taken everything from them that they can sift through and see if they can find anything that they can bring charges against them on. It says that displaying Nazi symbols and otherwise glorifying them are crimes in Germany. Well, then they act just like what they say the Nazis were.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not only the radicals. I think there's a large group of opposition to which I belong. And up to this point, we have been left alone. I mean, we got disadvantaged. I know of one case where one person was named for receiving the Bundesverdienstkreuz, the highest German government order, and he couldn't get it because of his Sudeten-German ideas. Those things happen, but by and large, we still can speak up, and we are going to speak up as long as we are allowed to, or as long as God will let us do it.
Do you think that the ethnic Germans outside of Germany, like, you know, what we in the United States and Canada, and maybe there's even some in South America, I don't know, do you think that they are a stronger force than what is inside Germany, because you can't do much when you're inside Germany?
That's it. I mean, I don't think we are more Germans than the Germans in way of, our being, but we can't speak up. And I tell you, I gave a lecture at my seminar this May in Bad Kissingen, and I talked about the problems Germans have. And it ended up with, Dalton's book, Debating the Holocaust. And people were sitting there afraid that anyone could show up and grab me and drag me out of the room and into jail. I mean, those people are scared. Mm-hmm. The Germans in Germany are scared.
Yes.
Democratic country.
Yes, absolutely. That's exactly how it is. They're as frightened to say anything as they were in East Germany under the communists.
But they are grateful for me to show up and talk like that.
Well, now, I mean, you've gone regularly back to Germany proper, I guess, over the years, but you said you just said now that you're not going to go back.
Not to live. And I don't think they're going
to
do me much harm as a visitor. They can send me out and not let me back in again, but I don't think they put me in jail as an American.
Oh, okay, so you will continue to go.
Yeah.
Good. How much traveling do you do?
Well, it's one trip a year to, you know, it's mainly business now, or based on my convictions. The family is gone. I'm the only one left. There are a few relatives left, but it's mainly to talk to those people and show up and hopefully get something going. I mean,
yes.
Convince them that it makes sense to speak up, even if you're German in Germany.
Well, you are, I really admire what you do, and I want to encourage...
Well, it's mutual.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. That means a lot to me. I want to encourage people to go to your website and read what is there. It's not a whole lot, but what it is very, very helpful and be very explanatory for them.
May I put in a word for another website I am involved with? It's www.sudetenbote.com. For those who read German, I don't have the time to translate, but there's good information in there.
And what is that second word, Sudeten what?
Sudetenbote, Sudetenbote. Sudeten okay. Messenger, to translate it.
Okay, all right, for German readers.
And that's the name after my friend Willy Wonka's Sudetenbote a journal which he created in 1964 up in Pomp's Lake in British Columbia, which now is we continue it as a hard copy and as a web page.
Well, you're a true German, and that's a compliment for me,
Thank
Rudy.
You.
And I just appreciate so much your coming on my program. I've been wanting you to come on, as you know, for a long time.
Yeah, I know.
And now here you are, and you've broken through, and now you've said all these things, and you can't take them back.
I appreciate having had the opportunity.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And to all our listeners, thank you for tuning in tonight, and come back with us again next week.
Thanks for listening. The Heretics Hour returns Monday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. Join us at ReasonRadioNetwork.com.